We're going to have a dog on the show first time tonight.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Doug? Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I will be with you for the next hour. We have a great show for you tonight before bringing our guest on this February the 4th on the West Coast, and in the Eastern and Central time zones, it's now February the 5th. I just want to say that this gentleman, who is our guest tonight, is appearing for the first time on Evident Footprints. And it's kind of strange because I have been on this network now going into my 15th month, and it's his first time. And it's kind of strange because he is one of the co-founders of BBS Radio and the brother to the famous Don Newsom, who has only been on the show, I think, once or twice, and has played tag team news with me. And I don't have a frog in my throat. I have a little dog in my throat. So if you hear anything in the background, sounds like the security system went off. I'm pleased to invite to the show for the first time, and hopefully this won't be the last time, the co-founder of BBSRadio.com, Mr. Doug Newsom. Doug,
hi.
Good evening, and how are you?
I'm doing okay, thank you, Don. Today was a very unique day.
Okay, you need to be closer to the mic, Doug.
Is that better?
I'm hearing you, and I'm wondering if the audience can.
Is that better? Can you hear me now?
No, I can hear you,
can you hear
but
me now?
That's much better.
Well,
I think
now, actually,
this is the mic I'm supposed to be using for live, and then I have another mic in front of me. And to be honest, I don't know if I should be holding both mics. Now I'm actually speaking into two mics, Don.
Well, that's working, so just keep it up. Okay? You're going to have to stay close to him, I think, so your voice level is up there. Seth, if you're around, you might pay attention to the levels.
No, and Seth is gone. I can pay attention. I've got the computer. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, very good. So, I asked you how you were before we went on the air, and you had difficulty answering that question. I wonder if being on the radio has any impact.
Absolutely none. I know.
Okay.
It's just been a day with lots of lively thoughts, and usually when I get into a thoughtful stance, I can be all day very, very quiet, and I work very, very hard. And that's kind of me. If I become thoughtful, I'm usually working at the same time. And
mm-hmm.
So you know that's when I'm really thinking.
Yeah.
When I'm doing something physically hard or aggressive all day long, and not saying a word and not taking breaks, then I'm
mm-hmm.
thinking hard.
Well, you have quite a colorful background, and I'm not speaking right there in the studio, although I'm sure that's colorful as well. You're somewhat of an entrepreneur. You have been for some time, and of course, as I mentioned already, you're a co-founder of BBS Radio, and you dabble in some other things business-wise. For the new listeners and those who are not familiar with you, tell us a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Sure, I've I'm a single white male. Spent too many hours working. I started companies with my father and my twin brother, Don, of course. We've been doing it for about 20 years. And BBS Radio is one such company that we both work together on. Another company that I work with that I co-founded with a couple other partners, and Donald. Donald's always been a partner in everything I do. Was a beauty company. It's doing very well. It's expanding. And it's kind of like BBS Radio. Both are doing well. In a time period when everybody else is really hurting, it seems these projects are doing better. So I'm happy about that. Would you give me one moment, Don? One moment, please.
Sure. Right now, folks, we're giving Doug Newsom one moment. I don't know how long that's going to be. He might be taking the dog and putting the dog in a storage room or something like that. I know he's probably on his way back now because it's pretty silent.
All right, Don.
There he is.
Forgive me.
Somebody's spending the night in the storage room, I take it.
Oh, no, I just put her upstairs. I love that dog more than I love myself. If that dog even whined in the wrong way and I hurt her, I'd be running for a mile just to get to her. She's the boss. She rules my life. Little Nikki, 6 pounds. She's a minpin. I love her dearly. She's been through a lot with me.
Well, I love animals, as you may know. My listening audience knows that. And, we should have Nikki on the show.
Yeah, well, she'd love it. She's very vocal.
Yeah, we could hear.
I think the term to describe a dog like that is neurotic. I think that's the word, neurotic.
Well, she wants to be heard. That's quite evident.
Yeah.
And when she walks around, if she leaves footprints, then you've got evident footprints. Mm-hmm. There you go. Well, you had your own show for a while on BBS Radio, and
I did. Yes.
Yeah, I got to hear it a few times.
Really? You're
the
one.
And I'm the one. I was that listener that was showing up there.
You were the guy, yeah.
And I think you had a co-host, too. Or maybe that was a guest. It sounded like a co-host.
Yeah, he was a young man, about 21 years old. It was an idea that he had. He was really prone to enjoying spiritual information. He enjoyed it. He seemed to absorb it. He knew that I was very spiritual myself, and so he clung to some of the, you know, in many ways, clung to me because I was a source of information. And that show was my way of kind of giving him a voice and also getting his mind to think. Generally, most people, they just don't think more than one way. You know, when you answer when somebody asks you a question, you answer it one way. You don't go, you don't use all the similes in a word that you could and answer it 7 or 8 different ways, or maybe with 7 or 8 different endings. And I tend to do that. It's almost like a debate. When somebody gives me or says something to me, generally I'm focusing on the words, and then I'm generally focusing on how many other ways they could have said that. So open-ended in every degree.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm asked questions sometimes. The other day, a friend asked me what I and another guest talked about on the show. You know, the question was, what did you talk about? And I said, about 55 minutes or an hour, something like that. And we have a way of listening to the words that isn't always what we're hearing, you know. So, and you and I have had some off-the-air deep discussions about spiritual issues, political issues, consciousness issues, which aren't necessarily spiritual issues. You know, when you're talking about being awake or aware of what's going on, seems to be a lot of people that just aren't getting it. And I know that just making that statement might anger some listeners, or maybe they're nodding their heads, yeah, that's right.
Well, you know, there's a real depth, I think, that comes from thought and questionings. Actually, it's just lots of millions of questions. If you're a sort of person who likes to question and reason and think outside the box, and you do, then that's probably it.
Mm-hmm.
You, Don, I've noticed that about you. You and I, we could speak on in numerous categories, talk about everything, probably entertain each other for a long, long time. But in truth, most people don't. I find I'm very reclusive. I'm almost like a hermit. The reason for that, there's not many people I can speak to and gain any real insight into any direction. Generally, if I speak to somebody, they're closed-minded, and it becomes evident instantly, and there's really nothing there to learn.
Mm-hmm. And if you're face-to-face, the glassy-eyed look doesn't help the situation at all, does it? You can't see it on the phone, but you can... You can sense it.
Yes. And you just kind of mute, don't you? You go into mute mode. It's all mute anyways at that point.
Yeah, exactly. And you feel almost like there's a remote control, you know, with that mute button on it. And they just hit that and sort of the mind shuts off.
There's a fear.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say it's because of fear, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what maybe that's a good point for us to take off in a discussion. What do you think causes fear? I mean, I've got my
lack of control.
Lack of control?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. If we feel we don't have control over the variables, then there's fear. If you had control over your life and death, there'd be no fear. If you had control over every outcome, there'd be no fear. So you feel you have no control on the outcome, and then there's fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, people call it original feel or separation from all of creation, and that's where everything seemed to, come from. I mean, I get that. But, in my case, I think it's more the fact that we feel we don't have power over the outcome.
Mm-hmm. A lot of people will say what causes fear is a lack of understanding or lack of knowledge, but those two conditions,
what is knowledge?
I think...
Knowledge is just something you have
control,
to...
control, something that gives you control.
Yeah, it's just another tool. I mean, it's not the overall... Exactly. It's just another thing that gives you control. So I think control is a stronger word for why fear.
Well, that's why those with the knowledge are the controllers, aren't they? Or isn't it, I guess, is the proper question.
They probably are. A lot of people with knowledge are controllers, and some people with knowledge really... Probably don't control anything, can hardly control themselves. They probably feel they don't belong.
Mm-hmm. And now that's interesting, because if we look at a topic that you and I and many of my guests talk about on a nightly basis, at least Monday through Friday on the air, we have this concept of a new world order or a one world government. The word global is used all the time. You know, we didn't use that word when I was in school. I don't know if they used it when you were in school, but it's something that's really crept up ever since George H.W. Bush, as President of the United States, went in front of the UN and used the term a new world order.
Yeah.
And it had a very cold, chilling sound to it, too, the way he said it.
Yes. It was coming. We could all sense it coming prior to that. But he was a real push, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Well, 100 years ago, if we weren't born in this time, we were born 100 years ago. Our idea of freedom would be much different than the idea of freedom now. 200 years ago, the word freedom would have a different definition. So on so many levels, people that grow up and are born into these times. You know, what we would scream and yell at because we feel that something's being done to us or liberty's being taken away or the whole, this unity towards some, or understanding towards some global hierarchy, it doesn't make sense to us, but it might make sense 50 years from now to somebody who comes up and is born then. And they won't look at it like we would and say there's something wrong with that because they won't know anything else. So on so many levels, we could fight anything you want. We could go back 2,000 years and fight any institutional government if you want to. Hell, we could fight every... There's a million reasons why to go out there and see something wrong. But we're striving for the best solutions, and I think that's where we're failing. I think we've always, to some degree, failed, and that's to give ourselves something to do, so we have something to overcome, so we have something to experience, so we have something to learn. So without these problems, maybe there wouldn't be a good reason for us to be here. So I don't look at them in the ways that a lot of people do. I don't think there's a nightmare that I got to go in there and solve. I think there's a great learning environment that's applicable to you at this particular state in your life, or yep. Government in its life, or a globe in its life.
Yeah, that word globe has been beaten to death by the media, by the corporate interests around the world, you know, the multinational corporations, and it's everywhere. That word is used everywhere. The symbology is used. So definitely somebody's trying to get a message through to our subconscious about that.
You know what and I think, Don?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I wanted to pass this. I actually believe that the idea of creating an entity like a company or any sort of entity that's almost got the same sort of identity or protectionisms that you might have, mm-hmm. and that sort of entity runs on its own rules and exists in its own ways like a corporation, which only has money as the mm-hmm. end goal, I think on so many levels that's the root of false sight, where we lose our perception of what's really right and wrong because we allow institutions that are really not morally correct to begin with in our world. And they're the things that profit the most, and they're the things that rule us, and they're the things that dictate almost right and wrong, perhaps not, but law anyways.
Yeah, I agree with you. And wouldn't you say that that's all based on illusion, since their end goal is money, which is nothing but a symbol, right? It's and the system, the fiat banking and the usury credit system, both are two aspects of the same demon, if you want to call it that, or animal, and, or entity.
And now a government's starting to be like that. Government doesn't seem to be any more about you and I. It's more about the money. Isn't it interesting how government has become like corporation?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think it was intended to be that all the time. It was, the question was going to be, who was going to control it? What secret faction, what secret organization, what group of secret organizations, or what secret rich people, you know, you hear about groups like the Trilateral Commission, and it's, you know, you have these rumors, it's the three wealthiest people on Earth. Well, who are those people?
Mm-hmm.
Is it Bill Gates? No, I don't think so. Is it somebody in the Rothschild clan? Likely. Couldn't it be Li Ka-shing in China or someone of that stature? It could have easily have been Aristotle Onassis in the days of John F. Kennedy. Certainly, he got Kennedy's woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing Alexander the Great did with Darius of Persia. He got his woman. He went into Persia, kicked his butt, and took his woman, just like he said he would. That's what Onassis did to Kennedy.
You know, it's interesting. My partner in the cosmetic company, Peter.
He took your woman?
No, he actually did Jackie Kennedy Onassis's hair and makeup for, not just mainly hair, but makeup at times, for 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, you think he would agree with my statement? You must have heard some inside bits from time to time.
No, he never talked about those inside bits. I wasn't really interested, you know. He's got so many celebrity stories.
Yeah.
I guess, to me, if I saw a celebrity sitting to the next to me, no matter who it was, I wouldn't blink.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I've been around them. They're just people like us. In fact, many of them have a lot of hang-ups.
Yeah, they're very interesting, weird people, actually.
Yeah, I agree. I've been around a lot of them in the music world and even in the political world. You know, being in music, sometimes you get drawn into political campaigns and stuff like that. They want you to perform, to entertain the people. Somehow music, which to me is very endearing because of, you know, it's been my life. It's been my primary vocation, and it's been where I get my joy in life is in music. Somehow music is real important to politicians. It prepares the people for their lies or their false promises. Well, they use music for that reason. Have you ever been to a political event where they don't have music playing somewhere?
Well, of course, every commercial, every movie, there's always music. Music associated with the scene, with the event.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's amazing the power that the corporate structures wield over that. Even though music is the element of a political performance that people see, behind the scenes is a totally different animal. I could relate a quick story. I've had the luxury of working with Delaney Bramlett in the recording studio over many years when I was in Los Angeles. And Delaney, who was the leader of the group Delaney and Bonnie, brought many famous musicians forward into the public arena. Jimi Hendrix was one, Eric Clapton was another, and there were many other musicians that got their start with his group. And at the time, they were called Delaney and Bonnie and Friends. And they were on two TV shows, Hootenanny, and the other one was Shindig. Now, you may have heard of those, or they may be before your time, but they were pretty popular on network television, you know, on the weekend, sort of like In Concert and the Midnight Special later on in the 70s. And Delaney was chosen to be the entertainment band for the Kennedy campaign. And he was relating a story to me that he was having a beverage, an alcoholic beverage, in the dressing room before going on stage. And it was recommended, he was drinking an alcohol with cranberry juice, and it was suggested that he try that with Pepsi Cola. Joan Crawford was telling him he should drink that with Pepsi Cola. And he used some profanity in his comment, and he said, "I never drink that stuff." It's too sweet. And she had him thrown off the tour.
Wow.
That was it.
I had to ask Peter. Peter knew Joan too.
Okay, so that rings true. I mean, I read Mommy Dearest and saw the movie, so I tend to think that was a pretty accurate portrayal of Joan Crawford.
Really?
And but you see, the promoter of the show, the corporate sponsor, was Pepsi.
Hmm.
And she had inherited the company when her husband had died. So she wielded a lot of power to have that important element of the campaign removed. And I never did find out who took his place, but it's the fact that the corporate money speaks a lot louder than the entertainment money.
I believe that.
You know, and it's still the same today. You know, the musicians, by and large, unless you're a headliner and you've totally submitted to whatever they ask you to do for their global purpose, you either eke out a meager living or you're a superstar and a multimillionaire.
Do you know, I can't understand on so many levels why we idolize people with money. You know, I've made millions twice. Lost it. I don't think it's very. It's difficult. The only thing that's difficult is never giving up under the worst conditions. Just keep doing it, and you'll get there. I don't care what your goal is. Okay, but Oh my gosh, Don, I just lost my train of thought. I knew I was going to take
Well, you were talking about having made millions twice.
Oh, right. Why money's not important.
Yeah.
When all's said and done, at the end of the day, if you have a pile full of money on one side, what would you rather have on the other side that could equal, just be as valuable? If you had to take, you could walk away with one set of things. I think on one side you'd probably have people or love or something else. And when that becomes more valuable, which at some point in my life it did 4 or 5 years ago, I became useless in business. I'm not useless. I'm smarter now. But I'm not effective as I used to be, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've got a conscience, so if you were to negotiate with me, I want a fair deal. I want to make it so fair, in fact, I want to make it more fair so you don't have a reason to complain or worry.
Mm-hmm.
I've become more than fair. So as a result, I couldn't be put in charge of negotiating corporate takeovers or stock positions or stock values or anything like that. But that's what I've realized through becoming more aware. The more aware I become, the less I want to deal with people in business. Now I actually look at them and I don't have that, oh boy, I wish I was Bill Gates or I wish I could give them a run for them. Oh my goodness. Now I look at them and I pity them. I'm saddened by them. I'm saddened that they can't see beyond that. And now I feel grateful to have gone through such a mass of experiences to feel the way I do, because I know I'm right in my
mm-hmm.
heart, and I know that the situation I'm looking at with most of the world, they can't see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the crux of this is, and I'm not going to pontificate to you or the listening audience, but the crux of it is that we have bought into this idolic worship. We're engaged in idol worship, and that is to keep us from really knowing our true selves. We're in the head heart, as I've described on many shows, not in our true hearts. We're in the mind heart. We're in these images that are created for us of success. You know, you go to the movies and you see Brad Pitt or Jennifer Aniston on a big screen, and they're larger than life, and seeing things in that way, larger than life, leaves this subconscious impression that these people are larger than life. And they have a lot of money. They're well paid for the roles that they play, which are basically to keep us in that state.
Yeah.
In my estimation, there are some very good actors. You know, when I think of a good actor, there are many good character actors that never make it big financially. And then you have some actors that, because they were in a couple of famous movies, they become very rich. And then there's some actors that just whatever they touch is really, really golden, because they're playing a role of a person. You wonder what they would be like if it was a movie about them that they were in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What would Al Pacino be like?
I can tell you.
In a movie about Al Pacino. Can you?
A little. I can tell you some stuff. Well, you got to bear in mind, I lived in L.A. and I roomed with an actor, and, he got an opportunity to meet a lot of these people, so there's little stories here and there I could tell you that could kind of give you a flavor for how some of these people really are, how eccentric
mm-hmm.
and strange they truly are.
Yeah, well, you almost have to be to be able to play some of the roles that they play.
Indeed.
You know, to play an attorney, or to play a detective, or to play, the heir of the Godfather's kingdom in New York.
Well, does an actor ever truly step out of any character? He's always in some character. It's almost like an actor's playing some role somewhere at some time, so he's never really playing himself. He's always in, and that's kind of the way these actors, I think, really great ones are. They'll come at you in a way that they're almost playing a role that they might have played way back when in some voice or some personality, just to watch you react.
Mm-hmm. I got to meet, in the days that I worked in Las Vegas, several times I got to meet guys like Buddy Hackett. I used to eat breakfast with Buddy Hackett.
Mm. Really?
when they had the 59-cent breakfast, in one of the hotels in the early morning. And so we'd finish our gig sometimes 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was hungry. I'd go eat breakfast before going back to my apartment. And I'd be sitting at a table, and Buddy Hack would come in, and he'd say, what are you doing sitting over there? Come over here. You know, and so you go sit, and these guys go into their character, but they turn it up 10 notches. Jonathan Winters was the same way.
Yeah.
You thought he was crazy on TV or in the movies. You should see these guys in person.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a hoot, but you ask yourself, are they ever serious, or do they ever come down from that stage?
Exactly. Exactly. There's not too many I've found that do come down, that I've met in a position where they were down when they were talking to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't like L.A., I got to be honest with you. I mean, these past 3.5 years, I don't see people in the same way any longer. I don't see cities in the same way. I don't see buildings in the same way.
They portray Hollywood to be some special place, just like on American Idol.
You want to go there, half the people, look, most of these corporate companies in Hollywood, these 8 big Jewish-run media companies, no big deal, okay, that they're Jew or whatever. I have no problems with any religion or any person, okay? They're all me endlessly anyways. But, you know, most of these people are drug addicts or have some family problems. Not the top guy, but I mean the people, the general managers, the people they put on board these things. They're fast talkers. I mean, you can go to their place, and there always seems to be a party. You know, the flavor is very odd. It's like you're in 1 minute and you're out the next.
Mm-hmm.
I can't get used to that. When you go to these parties, everybody, if you could bring up a conversation, you'll have probably 2 or 3 people either feigning interest, and if they are, they're telling you how they've got something better or they've done this. It's always an upmanship game or an impress me game or talk about somebody else game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now here we're talking about people who play roles as if they're other people. So we're talking about illusion again.
Indeed.
So the people in the entertainment field and all aspects of it, it doesn't mean all the people, but the majority of those people that make it big become idols. They become part of this illusion that supports idol worship. So we worship the people with money. We worship those people that are made to look larger than life. And then that goes into sports too, doesn't it?
Mm.
The athletes that are paid hundreds of millions of dollars over a 10-year period. And then, you know, we have the Rush Limbaughs who sit behind a microphone 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, and get contracts that are even larger than those that the athletes and the actors and actresses get. Or
yeah,
the entertainers.
That's so sad. There's people out there like the farmer who will work 18-hour days.
You're too far away from your mic again, Doug.
There are people out there like the farmer that'll work 18-hour days, 16-hour days, and probably feels like he's accomplished or not, but is never talked about. And is given no, not idle time, but we're not going to put him on the boob tube and tell the world to emulate a farmer. And yet, that's probably something that's more noble than most of these other situations or careers that cause other people to want to be something else, because they're not, you know, it portrays something else as more beautiful than what they already are.
Yeah, the fruits of that farmer's labor are literally keeping millions of people alive.
Indeed.
And he's not honored for that.
At all, is he?
No, in fact, they're paying them not to do what they do.
When we pay teachers the wages we do, I always thought, for the money we've spent, why doesn't government just double the wage of the teachers? Why? I mean, how bad could that be? How much money could that really cost?
Well, they want to keep them in line, you see, because giving them too much money empowers them to start their own school and maybe teach the right way.
Yeah.
You know, maybe just start teaching the truth or to... They have a goal. They have a plan, and they've you know, you have to give them credit. They made it work for their goals.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they didn't count on is what's occurring today, and that's in a sense the awakening. I think we're beyond that. There are either people who are awake, or there are people who are asleep, and it's not going to change much from where it is right now. So. It's going to be a question of how people are going to deal with whatever comes up in the near future.
Boy, I hope you're right and wrong. I hope more people do wake up. I really do.
Well, so do I. That's why I do this show.
Yeah. And I think, and I hope and believe in the future that we're actually going to see a greater percentage of the population, I think, wake up. I think our time has come. But, you know, I don't think anything magical, mystical, overnight's going to occur like all these people in the 2012 time period, you know?
Mm-hmm.
2012 is just another date on a calendar to me, folks.
Yeah, I've come to see that myself, and I would agree with you. It's just going to be another day like 2K was, and, you know,
yeah.
That was all about making more money for the computer industry.
Sure, riveting your attention to some boob tube or somebody else has got answers for you to run your world. Well,
yeah.
Sorry to tell you, I've got no answers for you. Get on with your life.
Okay, well, that's our show for tonight. Thanks. Thanks for playing. Well, you see, the reason I said what I said, and my listening audience knows where my heart is, and even you do, Doug, for the few times you've heard my show, or maybe the many times. I don't know how many times you've heard my show, but
many times we have it on the speaker up on loud when you're every night. I've probably heard every one of your shows.
Well, you know, we're sort of fumbling and stumbling through a variety of topics, and I do see more listeners coming to the show, and I do see the results of what I'm doing.
You're excellent.
I'm not belittling my audience.
Or your guests.
Or my guests. And I've gone into rants, you know, because there are times it can be frustrating to get people to wake up, and then I realized one day, do I have a right to do that? This is a free will universe. If it is, it's their choice to wake up in their own time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the people that are listening to BBS Radio or listening to my show or listening to shows like this are finding something valuable that they can connect with, or they're learning something that opens their heart.
Yes.
And then maybe their mind. I'm interested in opening the hearts, I'll tell you, because, you know, what the structure, the system, the matrix that's set up right now is really working on the mind. And if I honor free will, if I truly understand what a free will universe is, I have to allow those people to do whatever they choose.
I think you need a combination of the mind understanding the and the heart working at the same time.
Yes, of course.
You know, even though you might have all the heart in the world and you learn a lot, but you really need that inquisitive, that mind that you know wants to push itself a little bit or reason what else there possibly could be or what the alternatives are. You know, I really think one of the ways you wake up is by questioning everything. And not just questioning, but answering in hundreds of ways, not just one way. Don't just think one thing is the correct way. Try to answer it in seven or eight or nine ways and open your scope, your point of view. That, I think, as a way of waking us up. And if it doesn't wake us up, it still, it gives us the the propensity to look at a lot of points of view without coming unglued, to know there are more than one point of view, because sometimes I think we get so brainwashed, we don't even know another point of view exists. You know, and if we do, it's got to be the opposite, right?
I mean, yeah, you're describing an expanded consciousness is what you're describing, right?
Right. And 360 degrees of experience. I mean, there's not just right or wrong or that way or another way. There's so many ways. And when, you know, in the beginning of the show, you talked about one world government, global, all getting, moving towards one global hierarchy, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I look at the world and I think, that's going to occur if certain things occur. And one of those things is population growth. Why? Because as population grows, you have more diversity of opinion. And yet you can't have diversity of opinion. You have to have more or less one streamlined understanding that everybody abides by.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's space. You can't get in somebody's space or in their place. Or so you've got so many people you got to deal with that we all have to kind of live under one guiding understanding. And I think as we continue, our population continues to grow, this is what the outcome's going to be. You're going to have a more globalization. That's just natural. So we can fight it if you want, or we can praise it and go with it. I think it's a natural thing that's occurring. I think on many levels that the idea of having no privacy is something that at a higher level of consciousness, you don't have privacy anyways because you know it all. And and this kind of idea that you have people looking at you, more Big Brother around you, yeah, does it suck? Yeah, but really, I'm such an open book. You want to see my tax records? Here you go. You want to see how my company runs? Here you go. You want to read all my emails? I have nothing to hide. I don't have anything to hide in a conversation. And by the way, that's fairly liberating, fairly free. I feel pretty free about that. So on some level, I'm not tensed up about this idea of global uniting.
Yeah, well, you're referring to the utopian awareness of that, and with all the secrecy that's going on, you have to look at it with different colored glasses, or clear glasses, because I perceive, and you know what I'm even going to say before I say it, but I'm saying this for the benefit of the listening audience, that if it was such a utopian concept to have a globalized society, why is it panning out the way it is? In other words, why don't they come to us and say, okay, you've got one of two choices, and we're going to actually hold a real election this time. We're not going to fudge the vote, no hanging chads, no Diebold machines. We're going to give you the choice. You come with us and you have liberty, or you make your own choice and you have freedom. Now there's a difference between the two. They sell the you actually use the word liberty, and I understood you to mean freedom when you said it, but
yes,
that's how they couch their intentions in words. You see, if you're in the military on the weekend, let's say you're a sailor and you pull into a port and they say, okay, you have liberty.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right, by the way, and I should have been conscious of that, and I usually am, especially concerning the distortion of meaning over time with words. So you're absolutely correct.
But I'm not correcting you. I'm just giving you my viewpoint, but you're acknowledging that, so that's cool, okay? What I'm saying to the listening audience is, we're told this is the land of liberty. What is liberty? Liberty is a temporary permission to engage in a particular activity, with the stipulation that you return back to giving that up. In other words, you go back into a situation where you're totally controlled. So the guys have to go back to the ship. They have a certain time limit that they have to be back. And if they're not back, they're AWOL, or they're reprimanded, or they face a court martial, or worse. So there are penalties for abusing liberty. Now, what would be the penalty for abusing freedom? In its truest sense, okay? But people start doing crazy things when they have total freedom. You have chaos. But that becomes a question of consciousness and proper use of universal laws. In other words, you recognize you don't have the right to kill anyone, to murder anyone, or to kill any living thing. So it should not be condoned under any circumstances.
That, by the way, that single law, that single understanding, let's say, not law, but single understanding that all life is sacred and we have that, we should not take any life, and we don't have that right, I absolutely think would transform the world. If we actually believed what you just said, I think it's one of the most important things there is. Because as soon as we teach people that life isn't important or that it can be discarded because there's something monetary we can gain or land that we can gain, and we put that above that life, that's when things become, I think, very, very sad.
Yes. Now, if we look at those two words just for a brief moment again, those that tell us that we are in liberty, we're the land of liberty, and they're fighting, our soldiers are fighting for our freedom, the end result is that they have to produce wars that murder innocent people for that very purpose. It seems to be a bit insane, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It does.
Okay, so that's what their global society is about, and that's why I'm against even using the term, because we're not at the level of consciousness that you just mentioned, you know, where we have this utopia and this complete understanding of who we really are and our oneness with the universe.
You know, and that makes it difficult on some level for me to give my opinion, because it's almost like I understand there's a life that I'm living, but my thought system lives under different understandings.
Mm-hmm.
And the two don't really mix for the majority of people here in this world at this time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes, it presents us with a problem, doesn't it? One of those opportunities for growth, because it's only through the pain of moving through the density of whatever is causing that problem that leads us to an awareness or insight along the lines that you referred to, you know, at the top of the interview. So I bring that up because in the sense that you're describing a global society, yes, if you want to go to China, it should be as simple as saying, hey, I'd like to go to China. Here's the money for my ticket. When will I get there? Where will I stay? Who will I see? What will I do? What will I eat? When will I come home? And it should just be a glorious experience, because there's a lot to see, and there's a lot to do, and there's a lot to know, and there's a way to grow through that experience.
Mm-hmm.
However, you are met at the line of demarcation called the border, leaving and getting there and leaving there and coming back here. It's as though that you're not wanted here, or that you have to be given permission. Permission. That's an interesting word.
Mm-hmm.
It's two words, isn't it, actually? Every per or each and mission. what would be a good definition for the word mission? Anyway, there's another example of a word, permission. We consider it to be allowance, but it means something else, doesn't it?
You know, your insight is wonderful, and the fact that you look at words and stop yourself to see what the root or the suffix is, so you can kind of give it a meaning, is very similar to how mind has operated on so many levels. So I always enjoy our conversations, Don. I can see we would just, if you lived next door, we'd probably you'd come over. We'd both sit back and we'd talk forever. And there wouldn't be any TV because I don't watch TV. I don't drive a car. I don't own a vehicle. I don't watch TV ever. So we'd be talking all day long.
Listen to this. Listen to this. While you were saying what you just said, I looked up mission, what my dictionary tells me, right? Mm. An important assignment carried out for political, religious, or commercial purposes, typically involving travel. Permission. But you never really hear them say you have permission to enter the country or permission to leave the country. You're stopped at the border and detained, or you're questioned, or now we have lots of reasons why this is so today because they have fabricated thousands of scenarios that are causing people to be seeking hope, seeking security, filling their minds and their bodies and their souls with fear based on more illusion. Right? This is all about money. Political, religious, commercial. It's all about money. I'm speaking about organized religion. I'm not speaking about a faith here.
Yes. About control, money, maybe control might even be a bigger. Money's just part of that. But I think religion, like government, has gotten out of hand on some levels. I think just like any institution that has a great amount of wealth or the ability to control a great number of people, I think that the power lines and the power structure goes back hundreds, thousands of years even, and I don't think it's something that, you know, it's liable to change overnight. I think so many people have been brainwashed and there's so much heritage and lineage behind some of the understandings that we see that hit us daily, like religion. I think you got to, everything that's thrown at you, I think, is you've got to make a mental choice. Do I want to play in that world, or do I need that world? Why do I need that world? I mean, what benefit do I get from that world? And religion's one of those worlds. I see them. When my mother was growing up, you know, one of the things that, she's Austrian, so the first thing she came across, and when she came across, the minute she landed on U.S. Canadian soil at the time, you know, there were people from the local church down there already with envelopes, so people would put money in these envelopes walking off the plane, and they were actually pushing these people hard to give money. That was one of the encounters she had when she first came to North America in regards to religion. So you can imagine in my household, you know, my mom really didn't think a lot of religion, but she actually encouraged me to go to lots of churches, and my brother, and we did. I went to a Lutheran university, got my degree at PLU. I had friends that were Mormon, Jewish. I went to I have a brother who's a Seventh Day Adventist. I'm a half brother in Canada, so. We have everything in the family, and I have nothing bad to say about any religion, except that you might want to evaluate if it's really not giving you what you want. And
well,
I don't
the
think
problems with religions, as I see it, Doug, is it's usually the leaders of the religion. You know, the religion, organized religion, has been turned into a collection of cults. You know, where they make celebrities, idols out of the people that run these organizations. The same as they do with professional sports and entertainment.
How about this Don Olstein? What do you think of that character?
You've disappeared from the audio again, so.
Oh, what do you think of Joel Olstein?
What do I think of him? Well, he's got a really interesting message. It's the aspect of Christianity that really focuses on what Jesus' message was, but it's also the aspect of all the other religions too.
Yeah,
it's in Buddhism and it's in Islam, And it's in the Baha'i faith. It's in all the different religions. I can't say that it's in the Talmud. The Talmud is quite a bit different from what he's teaching. But if I have a problem with Joel Osteen, from my perspective, discerning, it's his unwillingness to look at a problem. And I'm not saying he's wrong in this, but to look at a certain kind of problem as, well, I don't want to talk about that. That's not what I'm about. Because, you know, if you wanted to talk to him about what you and I have been talking about, he would be putting love into it, and that's the part that I would agree with. But you also have to recognize what these other situations are. He touches on personal relationships, which is a good thing. He touches on success and abundance and that. But abundance isn't just in a financial way. And you have to ask yourself, how do these people grow so quickly, so large, in such a short time? You know, to where you don't hear about these people having a little church on the corner or something.
Well, he doesn't get political. That's probably one thing that keeps him there. I mean, if he did, he'd probably have sides that are trying to batter him down. So
yeah.
He stays away from being, you know, taking sides that way. Mind you, he is opening up Christian thought, I think, a little bit more along, opening their worldview, opening their minds to see different possibilities and ways of understanding the words of Christ in probably a more complete way. But just like any religion, I look at the 50,000 people he must get in his church. I don't even know how many people, how much that church must cost, which really just stuns me. And how much money must be going into where he might live or how he might travel or his assistants or the whole... most of the pastors and priests and bishops and how well they live, that bothers me. And I think that he probably lives fairly well, though I don't know. There's never been a documentary that said, here's Joel Osteen, he lives in this 2,000-square-foot home, he drives a 1954 Chevy, you know? I mean, but maybe he does. But I tend to believe that I see too much wealth that's flaunted, and I don't like that. Every time I walk into a church, I almost want to throw up. Can you imagine?
It's very ostentatious in a lot of churches, isn't it?
And this is what they teach you when you're a kid to go to church, and the first thing the kid does is he thinks that the church is supposed to be where the gold is. I mean, it's so backwards. It's backwards in our church as much as it is in government. And like I said, anybody can find a war to fight, Don. One of the things I love your show, Don. You really do stir up people to get out there, become aware, acknowledge the fact that these things do exist in our government, in our churches, that there are bad people out there that should be spoke out against. But I'm of that age and experience, right? I don't even look to fight anymore. I look to reason, understand, not take it in and say it's correct and kind of assimilate it, but more look at it, evaluate it, and move on. Because my mind wants to think of something else. It wants to grow in some other way. I mean, if I'm going to die, I don't want to have my spreadsheet, the line item out and say, okay, Doug, this is what I accomplished. And on this line, it's you fought government. And then over on this line, it's, you know, what you wanted to accomplish. Well, I can think of a million things my mind wants to accomplish on the right, on the left side of the page versus the right, which might just be one or two things that could, by the way, take all of you, all that energy within you, and squash some light for a million other things. Do you see what I mean? So on so many levels, my desires not to be a fighter in that direction. But here's the weird part, Don. I am. I am a fighter in that way. Because we have a media company that tries to give the voice to the people and really show these points of view. So
yes.
On that level, I really am a fighter. But on a more of a verbal level, remember I said where I'm in two spaces. One space is I understand what's going on, and the other is a conscious level that kind of forgives everybody. You know, a higher way of being. So I can't really talk to people. I couldn't get out on a pulpit and say, "Everybody, stand up! Let's hang these murderous sons of bitches." I couldn't do it. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be the guy out there inciting the crowd.
Yeah, I'm not that person either. I think my listening audience knows that. I wouldn't even want to attend such an event led by somebody else. That's not what I'm about. I have, and my listening audience knows this, for the past 3 months, been able, and that's really about after a year of broadcasting with your network.
You had a listening audience before you had me on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No, what I'm saying is for the past 3 months, we have been together moving through the solutions aspect, touching on the very things that you're talking about. You've heard my show. You know
what we've
talked about there. We're addressing these things because you can't expect everybody has come to a metaphysics class and they're all ready to jump into metaphysics 105.
There's so few people like the way I think or like me in that respect that appealing your show to people like myself isn't going to do anything. The show, the way you have it, is perfect. I, on so many levels, wish I had that ability to go out there and fight on that level, but I can't go backwards. But I'm not your average population. I'm that one in a million people out there that's actually had, somebody go in with their finger and, twirl my brain and change it. I don't know how, but they changed it, and so I can't think that way any longer.
Well, I'm sort of that guy that climbed the mountain. You know, I was the scout, and they sent me out to see what was up ahead. And I climbed that mountain and got a good look at it, and I came back down, and now I'm taking everybody there so they can see it. That's as simple as I can describe
it.
And there are dangers. There are monsters and dragons and bears hiding in the woods. There's going to be, in a sense, the word sacrifice to me is really an illusion, because things have to move. If you're giving something up, you're gaining something in another way. So there's always an exchange going on. But, the powers that be would have us think that, no, you have to do totally without.
So,
while they do with.
What,
you see?
Got a question for you. How does all that, what does a person do with all that anger? Imagine. That's probably one of the worst things. If somebody were to, let's say I have a person in front of me, and I take a razor out and I cut his leg. He doesn't even blink. He doesn't even really care. Well, it doesn't really do anything. But if that guy starts to cringe and he starts to get worried about me cutting his leg, then that person's got a double whammy. Not only did I cut him, but it caused him a lot of stress and worry and anguish, so it's almost like a double whammy.
Well, it depends how severe the cut is, because he could be losing his life force
true.
As a result of
true,
that
true, but
cut.
Let's say, no, regardless, you're going to be cut. Let's say that. Let's say that the situation is, regardless, you're going to be cut, so how do you perceive it then? Maybe there is. Maybe in the case right now, in the world the way it is right now, in the future, maybe people won't be cut. Because I'm using that as an analogy. I'd like to think that people will wake up, but I think we're all going to be cut at some point. The question is, how do we want to deal with it? And I'd love to have more people like you out there telling the world what's wrong with accepting that cut from somebody else, if you didn't put it there yourself. We've got to change things. We've got to have shows like yours that let people know what needs to be changed. So, Don, I kudos to you. I love your show. By the way, Don, you're the only show I listen to every day. And there's probably only a half a dozen shows on this network that I really fall in love with, mainly because most of the shows are spiritual, and I often feel like I've heard it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's really, I almost, in some cases when it comes to new spiritual thought, it's almost like, give me the book, I'll sit on it, and I'll just absorb the material. It doesn't seem to me anything fresh of late, maybe for the past 2 or 3 years. So, you know, it's all...
Well, we're here living, you know, we're here living. We're not up on that cloud, that spiritual cloud, so...
Yeah.
And we may come to understand and realize, all of us together at some point, that there never was a spiritual cloud. There was just another place. And it was always here, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of different ways to look at where we're trying to go. Maybe we should just be where we are and allow change to occur.
Yeah. Yeah.
And not expect a politician to create the change, because all I can anticipate from what I know about politics is a change downward in vibration. And limiting, you know, ever limiting, more liberty.
I say you got to change. Well, now's the only time to do it, isn't it? Don't wait for the future until you die to think that God's going to give you a better life, or you're going to give yourself a better life, or it will be a better life. Right now is your life. Now's the time to take advantage of it, to speak out, to maybe not speak out, maybe to laugh and to love.
Yeah. Now the listening audience is probably asking themselves the question by this time, and maybe I'm being presumptuous in saying it, but I need to say it anyway for those that haven't thought of it. Why is this guy on Evident Footprints tonight? And I appreciate your kind comments about the show and what I'm doing. I appreciate that because you've appreciated it. But the kudos go to you and your brother Don for making it possible, because if this network didn't exist, I don't know where I would be, to tell you the truth, because the message I'm bringing out is not welcome in many venues.
I can imagine.
Certainly not in the mainstream, although I think the mainstream could benefit from it. They just don't realize it. It's contrary to their agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The agenda of controlling the masses. I'm talking about you know, bringing an awareness to people that they can themselves make the choices. I'm trying to bring the awareness to have the choices. Many people are totally unaware of that.
And to know what the results are if they choose something else through the eyes of somebody else. Like, if you turn off the TV, this could be the result after a year or two.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
Yeah, and presenting the choices and the options, even different solutions to the world, I think that's important. Like I said, give me 1,000 points of view. I'd like to hear them all. And the more that you have, the more, actually, I think you're aware. If you have 100, if you have a million solutions to a problem, you're more aware than the person who has one.
Yeah. Well, I'm
and you're just, and you're giving us points of view, and I love that.
Yeah, I tackle along with my guests a variety of topics because they touch us, all of us, in different ways. They have great meaning to people. I interview authors, and sometimes it's about writing, or it's about what their inspiration is, or it may be the very topic that they've written about. But I've got a few authors that I've interviewed that look at their writing as a sidelight to who they really are and what their profession is in life. This is another aspect or another dimension of who they are, and it's to be honored in a way when they can empower people, when they can do the same thing that I'm trying to do with this show. I shouldn't use the word try, because I think I am doing it from the responses I get. I could say when I'm on another network talking about political issues or patriot issues, I introduce these spiritual concepts, and I don't mean this in the cloud sense, but, you know, the
no,
more...
You do.
From the perspective of who we are, and I'm noticing that is having an influence in the Patriot Network. But that also, that locale that domain has its drawbacks, because that's the area that they have to infiltrate to find out what's going on, to measure where's the people's consciousness. Because there are people that are looking at the world purely from a political view, purely from the perspective of the original U.S. Constitution and our founding fathers. There are others that look at the world in light of these patriot issues from a Christian perspective, or whatever their religion is, primarily Christian. And so you come against those people, because I have discernment and I talk about that, or I refer to it as intuition. I'm psychic. A lot of people have a problem with that, because that means that there's something devilish about what I do. You know, it's demonic all of a sudden. Yet the very people who are our leaders are practicing those things. They're practicing sacrifices and dark rituals, negative things. They're the murderers. What else can they be? You see? So you have all these things interacting with each other. And there's this constant struggle for power, or to use your first word, was control. Really, that's the first time anyone has defined as control. Fear. Usually, you know, fear. Yeah, it's a lack of control, right?
Yeah.
But if you look at that, if it's a lack of control, those who were doing the controlling, are they not fearful? And are they not controlled themselves?
Do you ever really have control, or do you ever really think you have enough control? Do you ever really think your home can't come down? We just need to put up one more board.
Yeah. See, the real answer to all those questions, and any question, is the truth is ultimately going to be the answer, right? And the truth is something other than an illusion. It may be evasive, but an illusion is put right there in front of your face, and you're told it's real, it's reality, like a reality TV show. There's nothing real about television other than it's real bad.
Yeah.
You know, and is there really bad and good, or are they just dichotomies of the center?
I kind of look at it this way. If we all came from the same spot, and we all came from something that's eternal, that's energy is eternal. I mean, it changes form. It might, you know, become mass, or then back to energy. I don't care what you want to call it, but energy, it's eternal. Anything that, and being that we can, let's say that we're all at some point, we reach a point, become God, not become, but you become like diluted into God, maybe. Maybe you take an ink drop into a bathtub, and the bathtub all becomes a little bit darker, the entire bathtub water. You know, however you want to think of that, being a part of God. Boy, I tell you, Don, I just looked up at the time, and I realize I've probably taken you on 25 minutes too late. Forgive me.
We got a late start. Yeah, we got a late start tonight, so we're not that.
I distinctly, my brain goes ting, 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 ting. I have my dogs looking at me, and I'm thinking, didn't Don tell me that I was going to cut off at 5 minutes to yesterday? Remember that?
Yeah, we got a late start, so then it wasn't my fault.
So I feel elated. I look up at the clock, and now I feel elated. I actually beat your expectation.
So we can roll a couple more minutes. Seth will understand.
Are you sure? I don't see Seth here.
Well, then we're going to keep rolling, aren't we?
I'm not sure if he's in the building, or if he's in the other room. Or
we'll just keep rolling. All right.
All right.
I think you and I see this alike. We're giving two different perspectives of the same thing, and I'm sure there are many in the listening audience that feel the same way. I really do. My show has a lot of repeat listeners. I get a lot of email. I see all the email Don gets, as far as what he sends out to the hosts. And there are times a message will come through the network to me, And they're usually good. I've had seldom any complaints from people. And I think I've given a lot of people reason to complain things, but for whatever reason, they're not. They're acknowledging that I am a human being and that I can make mistakes or I can be wrong about something. My intention is to share what I know to people with the intention of showing them that there's really nothing to fear and that they can be in control of their life, their lives. They are in control to an extent. Now, we seem to unconsciously give our power away to others for security and for protection and for all these things that really don't have any substance, do they?
No, they don't. What has substance is experience and how you feel about that experience.
Yeah, and your abundance comes out of that, and it's not necessarily measured by the number of digits in your bank account.
Absolutely not by the number of digits in your bank account, or I'm worth less than zero right now.
I was gonna underscore the crooked numbers, you know. Let's say in our waning moments here, and of course we don't want to end the show without Seth there to close with the music. So
well, hold on, stay right there. Let me see. I'm gonna grab these things off.
Maybe you should get Nikki.
Yes. Stay one moment, please.
All right. Well, we're waiting for Doug Newsom to come back. This has been an interesting show. If I can, just for a brief moment, tell you, you're going to want to tune in tomorrow night. My special guest is
All right. Here's Seth.
Europe, and his name is Peter Kayander, and he will be discussing with us some of his philosophy. And we're going to be discussing his book, Fragments of Reality, and that'll be tomorrow night on Evident Footprints. Are you back with us, Doug?
I'm back, and I wanted to thank you. I'm going to swing this over to Seth because he's touching me funny, Don.
He's
been touching me funny, and I can't let it go on.
Okay,
so
this is a G-rated show here. So
Don...
Will you give the listening audience some closing thoughts or a closing thought of inspiration?
The most important thing, I think, to become aware is to forgive everything, everybody and every bad event and every bad person in your life and ask yourself, nobody else, not a book, don't read a book, get rid of your books, get rid of the TV, get rid of other people's opinions. Even yours, Don, sorry to tell you. Even mine. And start asking yourself lots of questions at night to become aware of what you really think and why. And forgive yourself. So spend time meditating. And meditating is more like opening up and then thinking. I do both things. And forgiving. Spend time with yourself and forgive. Spend time with yourself and forgive. If I had to ask a woman, you know, if I wanted to find out if there was compatibility between myself and another person, I would say the first question I would ask isn't, you know, what sort of food do you like? It would be, how much time do you spend with yourself alone or asking yourself questions that you actually mentally answer? I get a lot from that answer. So that, to me, is the most important thing. And the other things, just incidentals, start reading a million books. Read trillions of books. Don't just read one. Read everything you can get your hands on. Watch all the shows on BBS Network, especially Don Nikoloff. I fall in love with him like probably the hundreds of other listeners that you have, Don. You're music to the ears. You're a grand and great soul. I feel that. I feel a lot of love in you, Don. I feel a very intelligent personality, a very spiritual personality, an evolved being, and I think you're very, very good for people. So tune in to BBS Radio. This is Doug. Thank you, Don.
Doug, thanks a lot for being on. I hope you'll come on again. This was a lot of fun, and it was very interesting. And this interchange of energy between us tonight, I'm sure, was appreciated by a lot of listeners. So I guess Doug is gone. So with that, I want to thank not just Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, also his twin brother, Don Newsom, and I don't know what you would call Seth. Well, let's just call Seth, our engineer, Seth Hendrick, is good enough. Thanks for the audio tonight, Seth. And I want to thank the listening audience for tuning in. Again, tune in tomorrow for Peter Kayander. And Friday, we've got scientist inventor Jim Murray on Evident Footprints. In the meantime, I wish everyone out there in the listening audience a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.